Haven't already done so, you can go ahead and mark in your songbooks song number 470, and that will be the song that will come after the, I don't know if you caught the subliminal message, or I don't know if Joe has been working on the idea of subliminal messaging, but I'm pretty sure that when he got to the invitation, I heard Rob will be delivering the short invitation. So we will see if the subliminal message actually worked, or if I haven't quite been tricked into not giving as much time as I would like. This evening, I want to talk just a little bit about the idea of a complaining attitude. And I wanted to address it from an idea and from a standpoint that this morning we looked at the idea of having a positive heart and having our heart focused on God. And we're going to continue to look more and more at this idea of the heart over the course of the next couple of weeks. But this evening, I want to take just a few quick moments to look at the idea of a complaining heart. And the first thing that I think we should ask ourselves is, how do I know if I'm complaining? If you don't have a spouse, it's a little bit harder to tell than if you do. Because I can tell you, for those of us that have a spouse or have a family, they will let you know if you're complaining. But for the rest of you who may not be sure, we need to ask ourselves, how do I know if I'm complaining? One person said to complain is defined as to express pain, grief, or discontent. Some will say that means you're just being a baby when you're sick, if you've heard that. But the reason that you hear that phrase is because you're constantly expressing this pain, grief, or discontent. And surely it does make sense to express it occasionally, but most people will tend to do so constantly, and in doing this, they are talking and thinking about what they do not want in their life, and thereby, they are attracting more pain, more grief, and more discontent. Because what did we talk about this morning? What goes into the mind is what then comes out. So if we're constantly talking about it, then we're creating this full cycle. What we should do instead is think and talk about what we are grateful. Talk about what we do want and not what we don't. And different people have said different things, but it seemed to be as an overall general idea, and I didn't pull this from myself, but from looking at several different things, how often does the average person complain? About 15 to 30 times a day. And then ask yourself, am I an average person? And are we as Christians supposed to be just average people? Right? Maybe I'm on the high side of average, and I'm not average in a non-positive way. Maybe I'm average, or maybe I'm doing a pretty good job. But anytime I look at this idea of what does the average individual do, I stop and ask myself, has God called me to be average? And then I look at it and I say, okay, I need to do better than that, don't I? I need to work at and try to do better. I want you to look at this picture of this little guy with the ball. And I want you to think about some things that he might be saying in his mind. And I was hoping to find a picture of a child maybe that was a little bit older, but bear with me on some of these thoughts. He might be thinking, dumb ball. Who made this slippery, cheap ball that's impossible to hold on to or even pick up? And that's why it's sitting there on the ground. He might be thinking, where are my parents? If they really love me, they would help me pick this ball up. I wouldn't be having this problem right now. He might be thinking, you know, I can't believe I dropped the ball again. I'm just such a loser. He might be thinking, oops, I dropped the ball again. It's my fault. People drop things all the time and there's no need to be upset. I can just pick it up and move on. Could be thinking any one of those things. The key to the happiness is the attitude we choose when we drop the ball. And there are going to be times in life where we drop the ball. It's just going to happen. So what's our attitude going to be? And think about, what if you were in that picture and you were looking at that ball and it was you? And what would you be thinking as that ball was lying in front of you? In this lesson, I'll just look at a few ideas and learn from the complaining of the Israelites. And we'll consider just a little bit and for time's sake, and in order to keep this short, I'm not going to read all of the passages, but I'm going to give them to you so that you will have opportunity to study. And we understand, just like we find ourselves doing today, in times past, God's people Israel complained when times got rough. If you turn to Exodus, the 15th chapter, and you read through verses 22 through 26, and you read about the bitter waters of Marah, basically, the people are complaining about the bitterness of the water, the bitter taste of the water. What they're not recognizing is, hey, there's water here, right? There is something that we can use. And going to the promised land was not going to be easy as they had initially thought. And I sometimes wonder if they think, hey, you know what? God's so powerful, God's so great. Look at how he got us out of captivity, you know, with God on our side. This is going to be easy. Does the fact that we have God on our side mean everything in life is going to be simple? That we're not going to have any difficulties? Or does the fact that we have God on our side mean we have someone we can lean on when we do come across those difficulties and we do have those hard times? See, people begin to complain when they don't realize or don't believe God is there to take care of them. They began to have problems when they started thinking that he would not maybe bring them into the promised land. When they started thinking, see, here we are, we were in captivity, but at least we were being fed. At least we had a place to sleep. And what, he brought us out here in the wilderness to die? So they started thinking, is he not going to do what it is that he promised he would do? Does that happen to people today? Do people start complaining and start wondering that God may not do what it is that he's promised that he will do for them? I believe in times when times get rough, we'll find ourselves complaining. You can mark down, and you're all familiar with Matthew, the 6th chapter, and verses 25 through 34. And think about that. I want you to first, before we read what's on the board, turn in your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. And as you think about this idea of complaining, as you think about this idea of how times get rough, I want you to consider these words. No temptation has overcomen you except as such as common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with each temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. You don't have to complain. God will see you through. The question is, do you believe it? Psalm 106, 24 and 25, talking again about God's people. Then they despised the pleasant land. They did not believe his promise. They grumbled in their tents and did not obey the Lord. We start grumbling, we start moaning, we start complaining that God is not giving us what it is that we think we need, and so then what do? People just stop believing in him. Well, clearly God isn't up there, and clearly God must not exist, because you told me when you taught me that God is a God of love and that he wants us all to be happy, and yet I'm not getting the job that I wanted. So clearly God must not be there, right? Or they may say, you know what? You talk about this loving God. You talk about this one who cares for you. How would a loving God allow so-and-so to die? How would a loving God allow so-and-so to suffer such a horrible thing? And so they start complaining about the situation, and they stop believing that there even is a God. We need to recognize hard times are not an excuse for complaining. It may be a reason why we do it. Hard times may be the explanation as to why we're complaining, but it's an explanation and it's not a justification. And I think sometimes we need to recognize that. That sometimes we can explain why we're doing things and we can understand why we're doing things, but just because we know why we're doing it doesn't justify the act. Otherwise, you can go into all kinds of things. Murderer says,
I killed that person because he made me mad. Does the judge say, yep, that's a justification, you're right, he got you mad? Or does the fact that he says, I'm mad, simply explain why he did what he did? It's an explanation, but it doesn't justify it. So we have this idea about what Israel did, what God's people in times in past did, but what about us today? Oh, we're not like them. Times get rough. We know that we're supposed to turn to God, and so we never gripe, and we never moan, and we never complain, right? God's people today are perfect people, aren't they? Nope. What about us? Do we ever find ourselves in those same type of situations? We need to recognize we are without excuse. We are without excuse when we choose to complain to God about a situation. And if God asks you why someday, when you stand before God and he says, why did you complain about X, Y, Z, and you give him an excuse, it's not going to hold water for you. It's not going to do you any good. So instead of making excuses, instead of griping, moaning, and complaining, think about the good. Think about the good. It goes back to that statement, and it's one that hit me hard, and I have to constantly remind myself, when out of my own mouth, I can remember a time when my van broke down, and I said to myself, why is it that every time I have just a little bit of extra money, something goes wrong? And then I thought about it, I thought, you know what? What if I didn't have that little bit of extra money that had come in that I could put into it? It would have even been a worse situation. But in my mind, I'm thinking, see, this isn't right. Here it is. For some reason, I'm blessed with a little bit of extra income, and now I got to have a tragedy. And so I can look at it, and I can say, this is a terrible thing. Or I can say, you know what? I'm really grateful, and I'm very fortunate that I had this extra money. Or I might just stop and think about it and say, well, at least I have a car to break down. How many people don't have a car to drive? How many people would love to have your second car that you say isn't as nice as I'd like to have? You have your primary driver and then you have this second car and you're like, but this is not the one that I really wanted. How many people would love to have your car to get back and forth to work? How do you see the situation? Do we choose to gripe and complain? Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. You see, when times get rough, that's the time that we need to spend more time in prayer. And it's not time in prayer to gripe and moan. It's time in prayer to ask God for help. And it's time in prayer to thank God for the things that I do have. Because if I can change my focus and get it off of the negative and put it back on the positive, I can begin to move forward. But as long as I gripe and moan and stay caught in the negative aspect, I'm not going to get out of it. So I need to look to God, and I need to be appreciative for the things that I have today. Ever seen that statement made or heard that statement made? That's not what I wanted. I can think back to the time when we were real young and I grew up in a family of five kids. And I can remember times where my mom or dad wanted to do one of two things and usually ended up doing both. Wanted to pop us on the backside for something that we said because it humiliated them, and wanted to crawl into a corner because of what we said because it humiliated them. It's the idea of somebody goes out and they get you a gift for Christmas, let's say. And they give you a gift and they're really excited about it. And we'll just call it a red toy fire engine. And they're really excited and they give it to you. And the first words out of your mouth are, but I really wanted a police car. I didn't want a fire engine. That's just not what I wanted. Instead of being grateful for the fact that somebody gave you a gift. Can you remember doing that as a child? Or being around children that did that? If you can, then ask yourself, if I'm doing it as an adult, have I really grown up? Am I acting as an adult should? When I say, that's not what I wanted. Somebody gives you something. Your car breaks down. Your car breaks down and somebody goes out of their way to offer you their car. but it's a car that's been sitting in the yard that hasn't been driven a whole lot. It still runs, but it's not the prettiest thing in the world. But they give you this car to drive, and you look at them and you say, well, if you're going to give me something, can't I drive your nice one? Can't I use your van instead of your whatever it is? Can't I do this? I mean, I appreciate the help, but that's just not what I wanted. Then ask yourself, do we ever do that with God's word? God, I appreciate what you're doing for me, and I appreciate the fact that I have a job, but God, it's not the one I wanted. God, I appreciate the fact that you've blessed me with a home to live in, a roof over my head, a place to lay down, and a place to take care of my family, but God, it's not the one I wanted. It's too small. It's not in the location that I want to live in. It's not as nice as so-and-so in the congregation. They have a better one. God, that's not what I wanted. What's taking place in Numbers chapter 11, verses 1 through 9? This is a situation where God is feeding his people again in the wilderness, and they are complaining about having nothing to eat, right? Was that true? No. Did they have something to eat? They absolutely did. God gave them manna to eat, and they had it every day. There was never a time that they were lacking. But what were they saying? That's not what I wanted. You brought me out here, and all you're giving me is manna. I want some meat. Kill me an animal. Do something else. And to go to the point of saying, not even recognizing what you're given. See, it gets so bad that they want something else that they don't even recognize what they have. They're saying, you're not even feeding us. We don't have food. Yes, you do. When you sit back and you say, I don't even have a decent place to live. You have a roof over your head. That's more than a lot of people might not have right now. That's not what I wanted. Well, there's a problem with that. That's a heart problem. And we'll kind of go back to and look at this idea of the heart. Turn, if you would, in your Bibles to Numbers chapter 21, and we'll look at verses 4 through 6. Numbers 21, verses 4 through 6 says, then they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread. Wait a minute. You just said, I have no food and water, and then you said, but I hate this bread. You have bread in front of you. And what does the Lord do? It says, so the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. How many people on this earth would be left today if God sent serpents to bite those who complain against him? Ask yourself, would I still be here? It certainly, again, goes back to one of those things that we want to think about. Here's another one. I'm tired of this. Why do we have to have the same thing every week? Why do I have to have the same cereal every morning? Why can't I have something different? Why can't I have something better? And then I have a guest stay in my home from Africa who opens up the cupboard and sees that I have 5 or 6 different types of cereal to pick from in the cupboard. And he's just amazed. You have 5 or 6 choices? I probably just got done telling Christian, man, I wish we had something decent to eat. We don't have anything. There's nothing here to eat. And then you see you've got a pantry full of food. Goes back to, I'm tired of this. It's not what I want. Right? Something we can think about. You look at Numbers 21, verses 4 through 6. Again, this idea of what they did, complaining and not even recognizing that the food was there. Here's another one. You ever heard this one? That's just not fair. In whose eyes? It's the first question I'm going to ask. Who gets to determine what's fair? Is it you? Is it me? If Cookie and I get together, we may have a different idea of what we may feel is fair in a certain situation. Who ultimately gets to decide what's fair? God does, right? God's the creator. God created us. And he decides what it is that's fair or not fair. Mark down again for your reference, Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 through 16, and take the time to go back and study the idea. And again, what we have there is we have the situation of the hired servants. And we recall that some started first thing in the morning and they were offered a wage. And then throughout the day, more people were brought upon to do work. And let us not forget that the people in the morning had agreed to work at a specific wage. And everybody else that came on agreed to work at a specific wage. And they said, that's fair. And then what happens? He calls people, and who comes in first? He pays the people that came in last ahead of the people that came in first. And as they look and they see the wages being given, here's man's wisdom again. Ah, surely if they're getting that much, then I'm going to get more because I've been out here all day. Surely now, given what's taken place and the amount of time that I've spent and the work that I've done, I'm going to get more. Otherwise, it wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be fair that I did three times the work of someone else. And what happens? The people from the early morning come up, and how much do they get? They get exactly what they agreed to. And all of a sudden, that's not fair. Why not? Isn't it what you agreed to in the first place? You thought it was fair when you agreed to it, right? We can't look at what other people get and say, okay, now I'm being mistreated. And that sometimes happens. We look at other members in the congregation and we see that they have a bigger house than we do. And we say, really, you know what? That's not fair. Why not? And who decides? Just because somebody makes a bigger paycheck than someone else does not mean that's not fair. Who decides those things? Instead of thinking about what I don't have, I need to focus on what it is that I do have. And the bottom line is, I've got to stop the complaining. Because until I stop the complaining, it's just like spinning your wheels in mud. You don't go anywhere, you don't go anywhere, you don't go anywhere. And actually, ultimately, what happens is when you're spinning your tires in mud, what happens to your car? It sinks deeper, doesn't it? The more you spin and the more you fight to get out of it, the deeper you find yourself sinking. And the more you complain and the more you gripe and the more you moan, the more you're going to continue to do it, and you're going to continue to spin those wheels, and you're going to continue to struggle. As Christians, we need to help remind people of the things that they have and the blessings that they have too. We need to, with a loving heart, when we deal with people that all you ever do is hear them complain, instead of, and I've heard people say this, you ever have that person that you start to see coming and before they see you, you turn and go the other way hoping they won't see you? And the reason that you do that is because every time you talk to them and ask them how they're doing, they give you a list of what's wrong. Instead of turning and avoiding those people, we need to find a loving way to talk to them about the blessings that they do have. Help them recognize what they have so that they can in turn share and be satisfied with what the Lord gives. Because the truth is, when we complain, it shows a lack of trust in God. Shows a lack of trust in God when he says, I've given you all that you need. Right? If I sit back and say, I don't have enough, and God says, I've given you everything that you need, that must mean I'm not trusting God if I'm complaining. Complaining can show a failure to see God in our lives. Again, we don't recognize the blessings that we've been given. We choose to focus on that which we do not have. It's an attitude of selfishness. And many people will say, the heart of all sin is selfishness. And that's why we're looking at the heart, and that's why we're looking at the idea of how to keep a proper mental mind. And complaining really shows a desire to follow our own way. God says, this is good for you right now. But I say, this would be better. Right? God, you say that this is a good job for me, but I say, I want this other job. God, you say this is a good time in my life to be living in this particular area, but I want to live somewhere else. I want to do what I want to do. What I need to do is take the focus off of me, put the focus back on God, and say, God, where is it that you want me to do the work that you have for me to do? And then once I've done so, will you continue to bless and support me as I do that? It's just a different way of thinking. And the last point that I'll make, the bottom line is, complaining is a sin, and sin can lead us into destruction. So as you consider your life, as you consider all the blessings that God has given you, I encourage you to ask yourself, have I been like that child that says, that's not what I wanted? Have I been like the child that says, I'm tired of what I already have. I want something more. I want something different. I want something better. You know what? No matter where you look, no matter where you go, you can always find something that's better if you want to. So if you're hinging your life upon saying, I want what's better, you're going to look, you're going to look, you're going to look, and you're going to never find. But if you look for what's best, and that's God, then you can stop looking. You don't have to continue to see it in other places. You can find what's best in your life, and you can be content, as Paul was, in every situation. And if there's any way that we can help and encourage you in order to live a life that is more content and more fulfilling for you and is a bigger benefit to the Lord's work, we invite you to make it known.